Be uplifted, be inspired. This is Step Forward and Volunteer.
Welcome to the latest episode of the popular Step Forward and Volunteer podcast, brought to you by Lions Clubs British Isles. My name is Samantha Boffin, and I'd like to thank you for tuning in. If you haven't listened before, our aim is simple. We want to celebrate the positive difference volunteering makes to communities across the British Isles and beyond. To do that, we'll be speaking to those who give up their time to help others, inspiring more people to step forward and volunteer. This month on the podcast, we are joined by Kira Byland, a member of the Centennial 100 Champion Lions. Kira is a double-triple gold medalist. She has been awarded a British Empire Medal and joins us to talk to us about how she got involved in cycling and what a positive difference it has made in her own life and to those she's coaching. We also feature Lou Munger of Winslow Lions, who joins us to tell us about the North Bucks bike ride, the partnership approach with Winslow Wheelers Cycle Club and First Down School, and the organisation and preparation leading up to the big day. But first, I have a favour to ask. We would like your help in getting the word out about Step Forward and Volunteer. Tell your family, tell your friends, and if you're a Lions member, why not let other members of your club know about the podcast and how easy it is to listen? All you need to do is to either go onto the website www.lionsclubs.co, where you'll see a link to the podcast, or you can search for Step Forward and Volunteer on apps like Spotify, Podbean, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. You can listen on demand or subscribe so that you never miss an episode. We publish a new programme on the second Wednesday of each month, and we're really keen to spread the positivity and get as many people listening as we can. So we caught up with Kira Byland from Centennial 100 Champion Lions, who joins us to tell us where her own journey into cycling began and all about the positive difference in her own life and that of others.
Hello.
Hi, nice to see you. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. So can you tell us how you got involved with cycling and where your journey started?
At the age of 12, I couldn't actually ride a bike. I struggled with the gears, the brakes, the balance, everything that you need to do to be able to ride a bike. And then a few years later, I then went to the Manchester Velodrome, where they don't have brakes. They have a fixed wheel. You can't stop pedaling. Otherwise, it kind of hurts. So I learned how to balance that way. And then in 2013, I was given a pedal bike with gears and brakes. And then I entered my first Special Olympics competition, which is people with learning disabilities. And then in 2015, I was invited to go to Special Olympic World Games in Los Angeles.
Wow.
So going from someone who couldn't ride a bike at the age of 12 to being invited 2 years later to go to a World Games in a different country, that was amazing to me.
Wow. So it took you 2 years from being able to start riding a bike before you began competing in cycling?
Yeah.
That's incredible. That's amazing. So now, how much training do you have to do, Kira?
When I was competing, I would train 5 days of the week, and I got myself a cycling coach that created a training plan. And then because of my intellectual disability, I found numbers and time was quite hard and to remember what I needed to do. So I used to colour code it. So if it was a green week, it was nice and easy. Orange, a little bit harder. A red week, oh God, it's a red week because I knew it'd be quite difficult. And then work my way through that process. It's called tapering. So you start off easy, then it gets harder. Nearer your competition date, really, you then start to bring it back down again. And sometimes I'd have to train twice a day on the weekends because I also swam and cycling. So that's where the inner strength had to kick in a little bit.
Yeah. Did the swimming help you with the cycling and the other way around as well? Did they both help you with each sport, as it were?
Yeah, so the cross-training between the cycling and the swimming actually helps because I have lordosis in my back, and in the winter it gets really sore, the muscles kind of tighten up, and the swimming was great because when I did backstroke, it would actually straighten my back. So then when it came to the cycling, it wouldn't hurt so much. So that's why it's so good, because it's working different muscles and asking your body to perform in a different way. So then it gives a little bit of a break, because training gets very intense when you're training for games and competitions.
So now, last year, I know that you received Coach of the Year for your work locally with a cycle racing team based in Tameside. So how did that come about? How did you get that Coach of the Year?
Well, I was nominated by a fellow coach that saw something in me, I guess, being able to have the coaching experience for so long. But also, we are an inclusive club. So we have riders with intellectual disabilities and also people that do not have disability. And it's a really friendly environment. So once a week, each coach kind of rotates, and then you get to coach in the evening. And then I found out that I got nominated for this award. I thought, oh my goodness, how amazing and special to have recognitions that they see me as Kira, the coach, rather than people seeing the disability first and then me as a person second. I thought, okay, what happens, happens. If I get it, great. If not, it's okay. It's not going to change anything if I don't get the award. I'll keep doing my coaching. I'll keep enjoying each other's company, trying to inspire each other, cyclists who do have the intellectual disability and some who don't. But I did get it, which is amazing to me, because it's almost like, wow, I'm able to achieve things, even though people might not think that you'd be able to achieve quite highly. Sometimes when you say disability, people might think they kind of aim the goals either too low or too high before they actually get to meet the person and meet their individual needs. Because that's my job, really, as a coach, meeting people's individual needs. I'm meeting my own individual needs as well. So it sounds hard, but it's quite fun. I enjoy my coaching. I'm very passionate about it. And I like learning from other coaches as well, because they might deliver something different to me. And I go, oh, I didn't think about that. Or when I'm delivering and they're riding in the group, they might go, oh, I didn't think about that. That's quite a good idea. And then you put it into your training, but adapt it a little bit to suit everybody.
So having that, it's a sort of unified, inclusive approach. This is Mosley Cycle Racing Team, is that right?
It is, yeah, Mosley CRT for sure.
So having that sort of approach, actually, with almost any team is a really good one, because you all learn from each other and learn how to cope in different situations.
It is, and it's just trying to say to other clubs that if you do have riders or people that come along that have a disability, that's okay. It actually helps you become a stronger coach in a way, because it's asking you to think outside the box approach. Yeah. But it's also saying that if you have a club that isn't inclusive, that's okay as well. But it's just being able to say, try and be open to the idea of it. It doesn't mean that we're asking you to change absolutely everything. It's just trying to have an open mind towards people that have disabilities and saying that they are welcome, you can join. And not being afraid to ask questions, saying, how do you learn best? Do you learn best by watching, hearing, having a go first, then the coach giving a little bit of advice. And then from that information, you can then work on that. But then some people might be nonverbal, which is absolutely fine as well. But we just try and change our coaching styles. But it's not a big change. It's just a little bit. So if you're a coach that likes to show, demonstrate, or if you do a lot of talking, that's okay. So it's only trying to start little things first rather than going, okay, I've got to change massive things about it. It's not. It's just taking it step by step and just looking at your session plan or the actual session and going, okay, I can change it a little bit here or a little bit there. And it's just trying to not get so overwhelmed. I think sometimes people might think, oh, I don't know what to do. But asking questions, trying to learn from each other is quite important, I think, to myself, because it's helped me grow from the beginning of my coaching journey to now.
Actually, that's amazing advice for anyone who's teaching anything, you know, across the board. So not only are you a passionate coach and a leader, you are a dedicated athlete and you compete in Special Olympics. So do you feel that cycling as a sport, or even all the sports that you do, has really given you confidence in other areas of your life?
Yeah, so having cycling as a starting point, that's how I made friends through my sport. And Special Olympics as well, they give opportunities for athletes to train and compete, and then even potentially go into a World Games that happens every 4 years. The athletes might have the opportunity to represent their country if they are selected to be a part of the team. And it's life skills that you learn, so friendships, how to, I guess, survive, work within your community as well. And it almost gives you a voice, as you will. So mine started in sport through the cycling of the Special Olympics, but it also gave me the opportunity to become an athlete leader, where I've learned different skills, how to be professional, how to balance being professional and my emotions. And different environments will try and stretch yourself almost, improve yourself. And there are times where you go, okay, I'm not sure what I'm going to do or how I feel. But it's almost like take a breath, take a minute, recollect yourself, and then you can kind of start forward. But that's a learned skill for me. That doesn't come natural. But it's nice that the different roles that I've gained, either nationally through Special Olympics Great Britain or regional Special Olympics Europe, Eurasia, or internationally through Special Olympics International, the different roles that I've gained through Special Olympics, national, regional, international, has helped me help other people. Because when I started my journey, I said to people, I want to be that person that I didn't have when I was going through my journey. And it's not saying that my family didn't help or my friends didn't help. It was just in mainstream, I didn't have somebody that I could go to that was a similar age for me that I could get advice from. My family have been so supportive, and through Special Olympics I've gained friends, experience, but now I have people that they can come to me and I can go to them to gain advice and enjoy what I'm doing, if that is training, competing as an athlete, being a coach, or a swim teaching, or a bikeability instructor. I like that I get to have different things from day to day, but I also like to support other people to say that even though you might have a disability, either physically, visually, or intellectually, you can still achieve
So you have had an absolutely incredible journey, Kira. Do you have an inspirational message that you'd like to share with us?
I would say that if you have a dream, you can achieve it, no matter what other people may think or say or feel about that goal or dream. And it's okay if it's different from somebody else's. It means that it's your goal that you can achieve, even if you have a disability or not. It doesn't matter because it's yours. You should be proud of who you are and what you can do.
Wow, that is an incredible message to end on. Thank you so much for sharing your story, Kira. That was amazing. It was absolutely lovely speaking to you.
No, thank you for having me. And I hope that people can see that or listen. You can do anything you put your mind to.
It's time now for a short break. We'll be back after this.
Never miss an episode of Step Forward and Volunteer. Listen via lionsclubs.co or subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts.
So today we're talking to Lou Munger from Winslow Lions in Winslow, Buckingham, who joins us to tell us all about the North Bucks Bike Ride, an event for the sportive riders and leisure cyclists, and the importance of planning and preparation. Hello, Lou.
Hello, lovely to meet you.
And you. So, Lou, the Winslow Lions are involved in the North Bucks Bike Ride, which took place in July earlier this year. Is that right?
Yes, it did indeed. This was the second year that we would run it. We originally intended to start this in 2020, but a national problem got in the way. And in fact, our first one was last year. So this year we were a little bit more organised and it went off remarkably well.
Oh, brilliant.
When we first were putting it together, we had contact with another Lions club, interestingly, Noel and Dorich in the Midlands, who were already running a bike event. And certainly we got some help and guidance from them. So it's a good example of cooperation between Lions clubs coming to the benefit of all.
Yes, being run in partnership as well. Yeah. And is there a school involved as well and a cycling club?
Yeah, we have a local cycling club. We're only a small market town, 5,000 population, but the cycle club has nearly 100 members. And they go out every Saturday morning, my wife included, as it happens, and in the summer on Wednesday evenings as well. And we work with them. They picked up particularly on contact with other cycling clubs and promoted the event through them. Our connection with the school is that it's a special school, fabulous site, fabulous building, and it's ideal as a start-finish point because it's on the edge of the town. So it has all the facilities we need to start and finish the event, and our riders are quickly out. Within 100 metres, they're out into the countryside. So there's no need for them to ride through busy town streets or anything like that. So certainly our principal partners in the venture are the Winslow Wheeler Cycle Club, to whom we're very grateful, and the Firsdown Special School, without whom we couldn't run the event.
So how many people are involved in the bike ride? How many were involved this year?
Well, we had over 300 entrants, the vast majority of them being on the sportive events. The event is actually five events in one. There are three courses for serious cyclists, so they term them sportives. So there's a 60K, 100K, and 100 miles. And in fact, the 100 miles is achieved by completing both the 100K and 60K routes. So that helps us with marshalling. We're actually marshalling, you know, with less area than we would be if the 100-mile route was an entirely separate route.
Yes.
So that works quite well. And then we have a leisure ride side to the event where we have a 20K and a 30K ride. And that's where we can get children involved, family groups, a lot of family groups did it this year. And obviously, there's an entry fee, but we made it free for under 16s this year, which I think, helped us with families in the current circumstances. We didn't want them to have to pay.
No, absolutely. And how young are your youngest riders?
Oh, good question. I would think probably we had riders certainly under 10, but only in family groups. Anyone under 16 isn't allowed to enter unless they're with an adult.
Right. Yes.
We have to be careful about safeguarding issues, obviously. And we have a huge responsibility, obviously, in the event of any accidents en route, though we cover that very well with first aid at two key points. And we use the community bus to trawl around the route and pick up any stragglers.
So there are opportunities to stop, aren't there, along the route?
Yeah, for the leisure riders. The sportive riders wouldn't want to. Their intention is to get the course finished. But for the leisure riders, we have a partnership with four local attractions, National Trust property, Claydon House, where the estate is open for free. And our leisure route actually passes through the estate. So to come off the road, ride up around the house, across the lawns and through the trees and back out onto another road. So that's very, very attractive.
Wow, how gorgeous.
And then we have Hogshaw Farm and Wildlife Centre, which is a petting farm kind of thing, quite a big activity. And the Buckinghamshire Railway Centre at Quainton. That's a massive railway centre with steam engines still operating. And Quainton Windmill, where they lay on people to give a conducted tour of the windmill, and anyone who still has the energy can climb up to the top of the windmill.
So it's a really big day out, actually, for the families, for the leisure cyclists.
For sure, yeah. And people have got a choice. If they want to do the Quainton part with the steam railway and the windmill, that requires the 30-mile route. But if they can only manage the 20, then that picks up the National Trust property and the farm.
Fantastic. But the sportive people, it's all about personal bests, is it?
I think for some it's just completing it. yes, of course, personal bests. I mean, some of these people have got really serious bikes. You know, I'm not a cyclist myself, but I marvel at some of the gear that these people have. And the camaraderie that exists among these groups, you can see, I find it fantastic. 6:30 on the Sunday morning, as we're starting to put things together, people arrive remarkably early for, you know, the main event goes off at the 100-mile event starts at 8:00. But they're there from 6:30, 6:45, meeting up with old friends, perhaps people in other cycle clubs that they've met in the past. It's so colourful because you've got all the different coloured jerseys that they wear, some with their club jerseys, some with, frankly, really humorous things on designs on their shirts. We even had a North Bucks bike ride shirt produced this year, and a number of people had spent serious money to buy one of them to wear in the event. So they're very keen. It's a very exciting time to be involved with them at that early start period.
And do they have chipped timing?
Yeah, we have chipped timing for the sportives, not for the leisure ride.
No.
It's a bit of a bone of contention as to whether we should continue with it. We do a survey. Survey results suggest that 50% of the people think it's important, 50% really don't care. So many of the serious riders now use Strava, so they've got something on their bike, on their wrist, whatever, to give them all of the data that they need anyway. For us, you know, there's a cost of over £600 just to hire the equipment and do it ourselves. If we brought in the specialists, it would cost us twice that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Then anyone else looking at doing it, I would say one perhaps needs to question the value of actually doing the chip timing these days.
Yes. And actually, that brings me on nicely to, you were able to get sponsorship to run this event, were you?
Yes, we were. We have operating costs of about £3,500. It's surprising how it ramps up. With promotional activity, banners, literature, And the timing, as we've just mentioned, various other things. So we secured £2,000 in sponsorship from an engineering company. It's actually a consortium in the name of EKFB. And in other words, it's HS2. it's the four major construction companies that have come together for the construction and engineering works for HS2, which is passing through our area, and our route passes their works in several places. And I approached them to see if they could help, and they have a community fund for areas that are affected by their work. And they gave us £2,000. And a local estate agent, £500. Alexander's estate agents joined us. And our local town council, Winslow Town Council, gave us another £500. So we had £3,000 worth of sponsorship to offset our fixed costs.
So that's great. So that must have helped cover the majority of the cost for the event, in fact.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a lot of other smaller contributions that are more indirect, if you like. So Erdinger alcohol-free beer was provided free of charge to everyone over 18. So, they're building a connection with sport. And they've been, that's 2 years, both events, last year's and this, they have supported us. We had two cycle companies, one a repair and maintenance company who set up a base at the halfway point, and another one who are mainly a bicycle sales company, had a display and a marquee at the start-finish point.
Actually, that's a good point. Are there areas around the route where if you got a puncture or something happened to your bike, is there help available?
Yeah, so obviously the technical help is in a static location at the start and approximately the halfway point where we had the Quainton windmill site. So we also have, as I mentioned earlier, the Winslow Community Bus. One of our members is a regular driver for the community bus, so we have the bus out for the day, and the bus just trawls around the route and can pick up. We also had a new thing this year. We had an emergency number, a single number for anyone. So everyone was given that number, and we had one lion dedicated to the day who had a telephone that was only used for that number. So anyone who had a serious problem only had to ring that single number. And we also encouraged them to use what three words to pinpoint their location. So we could either send someone out from the start-finish point, if they were closer to us, contact the community bus, or contact the bike repair outfit at the halfway point. So no one got lost or had a serious problem.
That's great. That's fantastic support. Was there other support offered to the cyclists on the day?
Yeah, absolutely. Best of all, at the end, we had a contact with Bucks New University, and we had about a dozen people who are doing a sports massage course there. And they came with all their kit and tables. We put on one of our larger gazebos for them, a sort of mini marquee. And we also had a professional who lives in Winslow, who does sports massage, and she came with her own kit. So anyone at the end could have a free sports massage.
That's fantastic.
and we had three franchises out for refreshments. So we had a deluxe burger van, an ice cream man, very popular.
I'm sure.
and a barista doing a fantastic range of coffee and other drinks. So plenty going on, and we staged the finish in such a way that the cyclists came down a ramp into an area surrounded by the massage representatives from our three charities, the food outlets. So there was a sense of theatre as they came across the finish line and into that area where to get their medals and various other freebies that they were given.
Wow, that's so important, isn't it, to have a nice big finish to you know, really celebratory.
Something we learned from the first year. First year, we didn't do it like that. We realised we need to change it. it worked great. So
fantastic.
Another good tip to pass on.
So how long did it take to organise this bike ride, the North Butts bike ride? How many volunteers worked on it?
Well, the core team of four of us have been doing things over a year. And I mean, we're already having discussions about next year's event. So I think I say a year, in reality, probably more like 9 months of actual work. We have to have a look at the course. We're trying to keep the course the same each year, but we've got to liaise with the Bucks Highways team. So we've got one member who's a serious regular cyclist and goes around the world cycling, is a course director. He designs the course and liaises on that. We have another member of the core team who liaises with the leisure ride sites and handles the marketing. Then a third doing all of the IT, because we've got a good website with a lot of information through that. And I handled the sponsorship relations with the county council, the highways department, and various other bits and pieces. So we pull it together, ably supported by our member who handles all of our social media. So that is terribly important too. On the day, though, 60 people involved in supporting as marshals or at the start-finish point.
So, Lou, you worked with a number of other cycle clubs, I think. How useful was that for getting the word out about the North Bucks bike ride?
That was absolutely critical. What we had locally with the Winslow Wheelers Club is people who many of us know, members in the club anyway. They have really good social media of their own. And so they promoted the event through their social media and through their contacts with other cycle clubs. And then our own social media guru promoted it on the Lions website. So between the two, we got a lot of coverage. In fact, Andrew, our social media lion, said we had the highest responses for anything we've ever done through Lions in all the years he's been involved doing social media. So that's an indicator that there is a huge interest in this, you know. So, yeah, social media is terribly important these days, clearly, in getting the word out. Yeah.
Yes, that must have been a real boost. That's quite an input, isn't it?
Well, we're a club in a small community, but we actually have more than 40 members. And most of our people, in fact, I think everyone who was actually in the country on the day and physically able was actually doing something to help. And quite a lot of partners and family get dragged into it to do various things.
Of course. So obviously this is a fundraiser, so it's going to benefit a variety of charities. So which three charities does this particular bike ride benefit?
Well, we decided this year to support cancer charities. This year, one of our past president, his wife had had cancer during the year, and that directed us toward cancer charities. So we split it three ways with Macmillan Cancer Support, and then two hospices that cover our area, Willen Hospice in Milton Keynes and the Florence Nightingale Hospice, which covers a wider part of Buckinghamshire. So there was a clear link between the three, and we know that Florence Nightingale and Willen actually work together anyway. So we had all three represented on the day. We encouraged them to use their own marketing to get their supporters to come out and join the event and maybe even get direct sponsorship just for them, because the money we make is from the registration fees. So all of that in the end went, the majority of it went to the three cancer charities. We also gave £1,000 to the school, because we think it's huge. What the work they do is amazing.
Yeah.
And we want to keep supporting them.
Well, of course, absolutely. So do you know how much was raised this year in sponsorship?
Yeah, £7,000. So it's not bad for a day's work.
Very good indeed.
The fact that we'd actually spent 9 months working on it, by the by. But, you know, £7,000 net. after all the costs and you know, allowing obviously for the sponsorship that we had, that offset some of the costs. So
that's brilliant. So would you have any tips or advice, Lou, for other clubs if they wanted to set up a similar thing? You've given us a couple of tips already, haven't you?
I think you need to start early. It's not good thinking, well, let's, you know, decide in May that you're going to do it in the summer. That's not good. It's not going to work.
Yep.
So you've got to be looking initially, I think, a year ahead. I think it's important to work with people who actually understand cycling. So if you've got a local cycle club, to meet with them, have discussions with them before getting involved. We'd be more than happy to talk to any Lions club who were going to consider an event. I'm sure we could do that over Zoom or meet up somewhere if that was going to help. And of course, you also have to work with your local highways department to be sure that they're not planning to close a road, dig a road up. They might even be persuaded to fill some potholes in. which we did. I must say that the highways team at Bucks were really helpful. We had regular Zoom meetings with them. So that, I think they would be the three areas. Involve people who actually know something about cycling. If you've got somebody who's good at marketing and social media, that's a key element too. And to start early, for sure.
Well, yes. And also starting early allows you to get sponsorship in and to be able to approach people,
Yes, not as easy as you might think, because, you know, times are hard for even the biggest businesses. And you've got to find a reason. You know, we had an outfit who have a number of pubs in our area. Well, they've got pubs all over the country, but they have three that almost define three points on our route. We still cut no ice because they spend their money on a local rugby club. So, you know, it's not as straightforward as one might think.
Good tips. Thank you, Lou. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast and sharing all of that information and just the sheer excitement of the North Bucks bike ride. It just sounds wonderful. It's brilliant work that you're doing.
Well, thank you for having us on. And as I say, we'd be more than happy to help anyone else who wants to take it forward.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you, Lou. It was great speaking to you.
My pleasure. Bye now.
Bye.
And that's all we have time for on this month's podcast. Don't forget, you can also listen to past editions of the Step Forward and Volunteer podcast anytime via www.lionsclubs.co or on Spotify, Podbean, Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts. Cycling days out are popular in all parts of the British Isles. They can focus on family fun or appeal to those looking to ride with organised events, as highlighted in the Lion Magazine Summer Special. Thanks once again to our special guests, Kira Byland and Lou Munger, and a big thank you to you, our listeners, as well. Take care and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Step Forward and Volunteer. If you want to get involved in local community volunteering, visit www.lionsclubs.co to learn more.